Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail, and the sergeant will be instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is Reverend Kathleen Zielinski from Asbury United Methodist Church in Duluth. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Holy and loving God, we thank you for the beautiful setting of our Capitol. Thank you for human government that makes our society possible. And thank you for the privilege and ability of our citizens and businesses to pay taxes and so have a share and a say in this governance. We thank you for these gifted servants whom we, the people, have elected to govern us. And we now ask you to guide them as their vision, planning, and decision-making affect not only them and their families, but all of us together, and even our future as a state. So it is that we ask for today's agenda and deliberations, and in all their meetings and thoughts, that you would give them and all who serve the degree of humility, wisdom, and courage they will need to help us become all that we are meant to be. Bless these, our elected officials, and their support staffs with a love for Minnesota. Bless them with dreams and hopes that are both realistic and extravagant. Bless them above all else with a love and a compassion for all the people of Minnesota, the young and the old, the rich and the poor, gay and straight, those with differing abilities, the able-bodied, the sick and well, the native and the immigrant. Oh God, bless the members of this body with love and compassion for all people of whatever political party or stripe, and of whatever religion or denomination, for we are all your children. May we be a blessing to you and to one another. We ask this by whatever way or name we call you, in great confidence that you hear and love us all. Amen. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogemiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
A quorum is present. We'll move to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. There are several Senate bills printed on page 3 of today's agenda. Second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Those bills are printed on today's Senate bill introduction and are referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, there are several printed on page 3 of today's agenda. We will take those motions, author's motions, as one motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. That motion does prevail. There is one Senate concurrent resolution that will be referred to rules. It is also printed on page 3. Remaining under motions and resolutions. Senator Koch.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders and for immediate consideration. House file number 978, number 21 on your general orders, and Senate file 509, number 68 on general orders.
Senator Koch has designated those bills as special orders. The first author of Senate file 978, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, I move that the amendment made to House File 978 by Committee on Rules and Administration and the report adopted April 27, 2011, pursuant to Rule 2045, be stricken.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, what this bill does is it helps out cities and counties. It helped them expedite some procedural changes due to the change in the primary date for the state of Minnesota. Quickly through these sections. Section 1 is just the prevents the cities and counties from being required to redistrict two times. Section 2 will give the cities and counties a little more more discretion in combining precincts. It'll save them money, create some efficiency. Section 3 is similar to Section 3 conforms to Section 1 for first-class cities. Section 4 and 5 refer to mail-in absentee ballots. It's, again, for efficiencies in the smaller rural areas where absentee and mail-in ballots can be counted at the same time instead of separately, requiring two separate groups of people. So one election board, one election judge can do both at the same time. Section 6 clarifies an election judge may be within 6 feet of the tallying machine. They have problems in the small areas and communities and towns sometimes with people jamming ballots in the machine, so this will help clarify some of those rules and make it easier for them to administer the business. Section 7 authorizes use of voting equipment that complies with certification requirements under state law if the equipment is certified Federal Election Facility Commission. The commission may be legislated out by the Congress, so this will allow Secretary of State to find someone else to accept those machines certified by another authority once that Election Assistance Commission is no longer working and they've been legislated out of business. Section 8 and 9 refer to counties specifically. They will give the counties more time to set up redistricting plans instead of having them put those plans forward within 30 days. They only need to do it 14 days before filing. And because of that timing, it also gives some more time for the counties and those who want to question the redistricting plan and review it. It gives more time to file with the judge and do those reviews. So that is it, 1 through 9. Again, it just helps makes the jobs of the city and county election officials easier, streamline some things, and clarify some language for them. Thank you.
Further discussion on House File 978? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 978 its third reading.
House File Number 978, a bill for an act relating to elections. Third reading.
Further discussion. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 978, or will take the roll on House File 978. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to the next item, special ordered for today is Senate File 509, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, Senate 509 is the bill that's gone through, I think, just about every committee in the Senate. Senate 509 is the bill to adopt policies to require a photo identification for the purposes of voting and bring integrity back to the state election system. Senate File 509 really begins to address what we're really all about. The public deserves to have confidence in the integrity of our election system. And nothing inspires confidence than a well-ordered system that's secure and safe for the voter, and photo identification would certainly accomplish that. Poll after poll shows that the overwhelming majority, 75 to 80% of all Minnesotans, want photo identification in order to vote. It's simply common sense to expect voters to prove their identity and residence. They do it everywhere else in our modern society, and it should be required when you vote. I think we have to remember that every illegitimate vote will disenfranchise a legitimate voter. Senate 509 will help people who may be having a hard time getting along without perhaps lack of any identification, and we will be able to provide that identification free of charge for those who necessitate such a requirement. 509 breaks into four basic articles. The first article is voter registration, photo identification, and provisional balloting. Number two, some administrative changes in the direction of administration and voter integrity. Electronic rosters, which are a voluntary policy in the event that a city or municipality would wish to use an electronic process. And then, of course, other sundry aspects of the bill. And some changes in language just to bring it up to speed with modern language. The bill goes into a variety of different aspects, and as I mentioned before, we went through six committees. Just in our caucus alone, I think there was only one member of our entire caucus that has not heard this bill in some way. Nevertheless, I think it's been exceptionally well vetted, and I believe it's a process. Our process, the legislative process, is doing good service to the policy of this bill. We've actually adopted a number of amendments in the way. We've shrunk the size of this bill as it originally came out. I think it was close to 170 pages, and I think we're now down to the 40 or 50 pages that are before you. So some of your questions may be addressing previous versions of the bill, but I'll be happy to point those out if anyone has questions. We've had questions about the security, whether Social Security numbers should be used, religious objections in the event that you're a religious objector to any type of photo being taken of yourself, how students are to vote, how people who are caught in a residential facility and they don't have the movement that they once had. We have addressed those items as well as the need for a provisional balloting system. Some of the amendments that we've considered already, at least the ones that were adopted, and there are actually some of these I risk mentioning, but even the DFL have had amendments that we've adopted into this bill during the various stops that we had on the way in the process of bringing it to the floor. Vouching in residential facilities, we adopted. Deleting the repealer of all the rules that was in the previous bill, was adopted. Guardianship was recognized as it currently is, and it was not changed. And of course, Senator Weiger mentioned whether or not to have a school election expert on the legislative task force that's being placed and due to report to us later this summer on any other details that need to be addressed. Madam President, I believe that the bill is in ready form, and I'll stand for any questions or amendments that may follow.
Further discussion on Senate File 509. Further discussion on Senate File 509. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President and members. And Senator Limmer, thank you for that brief description of the bill. I'd first just like to bring up something that isn't totally relevant to this issue, but I think is worthwhile for this body to consider. And that is that this provision has gone through numerous committees. We spent hours on this bill. I know, Senator Limmer, you've put a lot of work into it. But I just point out that the charge that we were sent here to do, our main priority this legislative session, was to balance the budget. And this bill does not do that. In fact, there's a fiscal note to it, so it makes solving our budget deficit even worse. And I feel like this is just somewhat of a distraction from the main work that we were sent here to do this legislative session. And it's puzzling to me why our leadership is prioritizing this somewhat divisive social issue over balancing the budget or coming up with job creations, getting Minnesotans back to work. But moving past that, I'd also point out that Senator Rest and Senator Gerlach and I, along with former Representative Emmer, Representative Kiffmeyer, and some others, worked 2 years ago to pass major election reform. And Governor Pawlenty, like other predecessors of his, Governor Carlson, said that for there to be major election reform to pass the state of Minnesota, it needed to be accomplished in a bipartisan manner. And that's my second criticism of this provision, of us taking up this provision today. There is no attempt made by the majority party to engage the minority in either the House or the Senate to work out any sort of deal or any sort of compromise where a solution to this could be reached. And I feel like that is a major oversight and means that this bill is likely headed for a veto because Governor Dayton has said he will maintain that standard that previous governors had, that all major election bills need to have strong bipartisan support. Third, I'd suggest that this is a somewhat political issue, and it's attempting to fix a non-existent problem. It's a solution, as the governor said, in search of a problem, in fact. We don't have any documented cases of voter impersonation in Minnesota. I will acknowledge that in the previous election, there were 7 felons who voted erroneously, or who voted illegally, I should say. This photo ID provision, and I think this is important for the public to understand, does nothing to address the real root problem with what minuscule amount of voter fraud there may be in Minnesota. 7 felons voted that weren't supposed to vote under current Minnesota law. As you know, Senator Limmer and members, showing a photo ID when you go to vote at the polls will not prevent felons, those 7 felons, or perhaps any other ones that there were, from being allowed to vote. So, again, I just say that I think that this, in some way, is a solution in search of a problem. I don't think we need to be reminded, but perhaps given some of the previous comments of legislators and the other body, it's important to remind members that voting is a constitutional right that must be protected. Minnesota has a lot to be proud of in the integrity of its election system. We have the highest voter turnout in the nation. In the last election, over 78% of Minnesotans who were eligible to vote did vote, and that resulted in one of the highest voter turnouts, or the highest voter turnout in the country. This provision, or this bill, because it requires people who may not have a photo ID to present one at the polls, could have or will have the consequence of disenfranchising thousands of Minnesotans. Like many of you here, I want to work to improve the integrity of our election system. As technology improves, there's certainly more things that we can all be doing. We can work together as policymakers to improve the integrity of our election system. But this provision, with all due respect, Senator Littmer, I believe sets the state back. Sets the state back to the days of poll taxes and denying the right to vote to certain Minnesotans. For instance, my grandmother, who passed away just over a year and a half ago, was 97 years old and had not had a driver's license in quite some time. Now, we probably could have come up with her, my mom said we did have a birth certificate for her, but taking my 97-year-old grandmother, who was in a nursing home, to the county auditor's office to get a voter ID would have been somewhat of a burden, even though people at the polling place where she votes know her. She had been voting at the same polling place for over, I don't know, probably 60 years, 70 years. But yet we now say to elderly Minnesotans and people like my grandmother that they would be required to show an ID, even though those poll workers certainly knew that she was Florence Kateria and that she was an eligible voter and entitled to vote. So I'm happy to discuss more provisions of this bill as the debate unfolds, but I just urge members that we should, like I said, if we're going to try to pass legislation that fundamentally changes our election system, it needs to be done in concert with both political parties, and I failed to mention before, also with our local election officials who were involved in previous successful attempts to modernize our election system. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Thompson.
Madam President, members, thank you. You know, whenever I talk to folks who oppose the notion of a photo ID for voting, one of the first things to come out of their mouth is generally, everybody supports having an election system with integrity. Well, what could be a more important first step to the integrity of an election system than when I present to the poll to cast my vote, I simply have to demonstrate that I am the person I claim to be, that I am who I actually say I am. That is why we want a photo ID system, is so that people simply have to walk in to cast their vote and prove that they are who they say they are. It seems to me that that is absolutely at the root of electoral integrity, is to make sure that if you vote and you hold yourself out to be Dave Thompson, that you are. That's what this would accomplish. I'd also like to just address a few of the points made by Senator Sieben. As far as a budget deal goes, we were roundly criticized for setting early deadlines, for moving things quickly and getting the budget taken care of. I personally think that was a very good idea, because we've left plenty of time to get things done. But the fact of the matter is, there are no budgets sitting in our committee waiting to be dealt with. They've all been put out of committee. They've all been voted on. We've done our job there. And that's why it's time to move on to some of the other important businesses of the state. Senator Sieben also talked about the need to be bipartisan. I think the fact is that if we were to listen to the people of Minnesota, this would be a bipartisan effort because anecdotally, as well as looking at the data that I've seen, the vast majority of Minnesotans do support this common sense notion that once again, when you show up to vote, you just demonstrate that you are who you purport to be. There's also a discussion about the fact that there's no need to do this because we don't have a lot of felons voting. That's not what this is an attempt to cause the problem. That we're not trying to stop people from voting with this measure because of those kinds of things. What we're attempting to do is we are attempting to make sure that things like vouching for others doesn't result in fraud and those kinds of issues. So this isn't an attempt to address some of the things that many of the detractors say we're attempting to address. And finally, it is talked about the fact that voting is a right. Well, certainly voting is a right. We all acknowledge that not only is it a right, it is arguably the fundamental right that we as Americans have because without input into the very political system that governs us, all of our other rights become meaningless. But there's two sides to this coin, folks. It is true that if there's a person out there who ends up not voting that should have been eligible to vote, that's unfortunate. But likewise, if somebody goes to the polls and votes for the candidates that I didn't vote for, and that person's voting illegally, I have been disenfranchised. So this argument works both ways. And in terms of this idea that this is the equivalent of a poll tax, the bill provides for a free ID. There's no charge. This is not a poll tax. This is simply a matter of people needing to demonstrate that they are who they say they are. It's a matter of common sense. The people support it, and I would encourage all of the members to support it.
Further discussion, actually, I have Senators Hoffman and Senator Berglund, and I will add Senator Reinert. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I want to respond a little bit to what Senator Sieben had to say about her grandmother. I want to talk about my father-in-law, who died in 2007. And when I went to the polls to vote in the primary last fall, his name was still on the voting roll. And I asked the election judge why my father-in-law, who had been dead since 2007, was still on the voting roll, and she didn't have an answer for me. So I had to go to the county seat the next day, and I had to sign an affidavit in my husband's name, who was the personal representative of my father-in-law's estate, that he was no longer on this earth, therefore he was not qualified to vote. And I asked why my father-in-law's name was still on the voting rolls, and she didn't have an adequate answer other than it had to do with the state statute and four election cycles. And I said, with today's electronic technology that we have, the idea that his death certificate hadn't made it to the Secretary of State's office to have the voting rolls cleaned up, to me was a little hard to take, especially in the age that we live in. Now, I live in a very small town. I vote in a very small precinct. And so I was able to cross his name out and see that my father-in-law's name wasn't going to be used to vote. But there are many, many areas where the election judges don't know who the people are that are voting. And anybody that would have paid any attention to our election law and any attention to the obituaries would know that my father-in-law's name was still on the voting rolls had I not gone and taken some proactive action to have his name removed. When I went to vote on November 2nd, his name was removed. I support this bill because I think we need to have integrity. We need to make sure the people are who they say they are and that they're voting where they say they live. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Madam President. So it is not surprising to me that we have a bill before us today that makes it more difficult to vote and will disenfranchise many people. And while the bill does pay for a voter ID card, it does not pay for the birth certificate or other documentation that you need to get one. And a birth certificate in Minnesota costs you $45. So there will be people that are poor, elderly, unable to get a birth certificate in order to get a voting card with a picture ID on it. But beyond that, what is more troubling to me than anything else is that we have a majority party in this chamber who ran on being fiscally conservative. Being fiscally conservative means you don't spend money you don't have. And as of today, we in the Minnesota Senate have not passed a balanced budget. So the fact that this bill carries with it a little over $5 million in new spending means that we're spending money here today that we don't have. We're spending money we don't have to solve a problem that is non-existent. And in the process, we will cause citizens of the state of Minnesota who are elderly and poor to have to spend money they don't have in order to be able to vote. So rather than make the job of the conferees that are out trying to resolve bills that don't balance the budget yet, finding more money, rather than having them have to find even more money because we passed this bill today, I would urge members to vote no on this measure.
Further discussion, Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I rise to oppose this bill. There's a lot about the voter ID that when we were talking about it in committee that I found actually very refreshing. It was a good conversation. I think there was some good things there. But there are two parts of this bill that I find objectionable and that I want to speak to. The first is just kind of my personal experience, and maybe that's just kind of the tone for the day. But it's not my grandma or my dad or anybody in my family that I'm speaking about on behalf. It's on behalf of battered women. I've been there at 2 o'clock in the morning when we do the bag and drag because she's been beaten so badly that she can't talk, she can't see, and we scoop her up and we take her down to Regent's Hospital and we put her in a room and we put her basically in protective custody, and then from protective custody, my domestic violence guys would take her over to Women's Advocates, to a shelter, and she would be there maybe with her kids, maybe with the clothes that were on her back. But she didn't take her purse. She didn't have her ID. And she can't go back to the house to get her ID because that's where her batterer is. In the original legislation that we have changed here, there was a provision for vouching. And it would allow that woman who didn't grab her purse with even an old ID or any ID at all to still be able to come and vote because somebody else in the shelter would be able to vouch for her. It seems to me that that's not an unreasonable piece here, given the extraordinary conditions that some of our least fortunate, and especially our victims, find themselves in, whether they're victims because of mental health and they're in a shelter, whether they're disabled, or in the case of battered women, because they have been physically been beaten and can no longer go home to find a birth certificate, to find a driver's license, to find an ID, to find an old gas bill. I don't feel that they should be disenfranchised because somebody else took their rights away, and that this bill, I think, effectively takes their rights further away from them. The second piece that I wish to speak about is the disenfranchisement of the black community. National polls say that about 25% of African Americans don't have a photo ID. And while, yes, this would allow you to get a free photo ID from the state, what do you need to get a free photo ID? Well, you need ID. Well, if you have no ID, and if you don't have a birth certificate, how do you get the free ID? Well, the answer is you don't. In Wisconsin, and I would be loath to use them as an example, when they did their study in about 2005, between 55% and 78% of African Americans there did not have the requisite ID to be able to get a free voter ID. 55%. So 25% nationally don't have a photo ID generally, but even in our adjoining state, we're talking in excess of half of the population who would not be able to vote. To say that that's not a poll tax, I think, is disingenuous. My read of what a poll tax was historically was that it's a precondition for the right to vote. Whether it's de facto or implicit, it is still a precondition. And what this photo ID does is it creates a precondition for the right to vote. The precondition is that you have to have a birth certificate. You have to have a photo ID. And when this disenfranchises 55% of the African-American community, potentially, when it disenfranchises battered women and other people that are disabled, I find that there are provisions of this bill that I definitely find objectionable, and I would argue and ask folks to vote no on this bill.
Further discussion, Senator DeCrife.
Thank you, Madam President. I believe this is one of the greatest rights that we have in America to vote. And to protect this right is something that I am very serious about wanting to do. I just wanted to share that I have a disabled son, and he has a photo ID. It's not that difficult to get. My wife and I went along with him. We helped him take the picture. He has his photo ID, and he can use it, and he has to use it from time to time. In fact, he has a checkbook. When my wife writes out a check out of his checkbook, they have to show his ID. So we need to show photo IDs for so many different things in the world today. To show it to vote, I believe, is a very minor thing. And I would challenge all those that are thinking that this is such a difficult thing to get to join together with me and try to help those folks get a legal photo ID so that they can vote. I want to make sure everyone that has the right to vote should vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to also oppose this legislation on behalf of students, especially the students who are attending our four-year universities and living on campus or near campus and away from home. For them, changing their driver's license isn't always a practical option, so they keep their home license wherever it is. And they have to make a decision then about whether they're going to make a trip on Tuesday back to their home community that could be several hours away and miss classes, or they vote on campus in where they're living currently. And this creates a problem for them in being able to document where they're living. You know, they can get a resident hall list sometimes will be given to the county auditor that shows they live in a residence hall. That's often complicated. We've been working on that. And if they live in shared housing with other students, usually only one student will have the utility bills in their name. And so they're able to document that they live there, but the other students in the house are not. That's why same-day voting and vouching is so important for these students. Disenfranchising students is not healthy for our democracy, and for these first-time voters, it actually doesn't take very much to discourage them. If they have to go to any additional hassle or problem or, you know, figure out what to do, and they're busy, they have to study, they have finals, it's in our best interest to make it as easy as possible for them to vote. That's important, so that they feel like they are full citizens and fully engaged in the community they live. It could be when they graduate from college, they're going to stay in this community. So I think it's a real problem. For students, we're creating more problems, and I just want to call your attention to the letter from the Minnesota State University Student Association indicating that they do oppose this bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langston.
Madam President, members, I've heard this referred to as an anti-grandparents bill. Well, my mother is a great-great-grandparent, and she's 95 years old. Now, if she wasn't living with my sister, she most likely wouldn't have an ID card, but my sister got it for her. Over the weekend, a city official from a small city in my district called me, and he said, you know, we have several very elderly people in my city that have lived there in the same place for 50 or 60 years. He said they do not have driver's license, and it's very difficult for them to get around. And he said, what are we supposed to do when they come in to vote? Are we supposed to say, well, we know you, we know where you've lived for the last 50, 60 years, but you can't vote? Sure, there is an avenue that they can take to make it legal for them to vote, but in a number of cases, they simply will not do that. So I do oppose the bill. I was told in Finance Committee that, well, one option is that the election officials could look back and see if they voted before, but now I have heard that that provision is not in the bill. So I do oppose this. I think it's very bad legislation, and it is meant to suppress certain people from voting.
Further discussion, I have Senator Cohen, and then we'll go to Senator Higgins and Senator Tomasoni. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, would Senator Limmer yield?
Senator Limmer will yield for a question. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Limmer, let me take a run at you again. You've given a very articulate description of the bill, what you intend the bill to do, and how it's going to work. But let me ask you again, as I did in committee, to quantify what the problem is. Senator Sieben indicated that if we're dealing with the issue of felons, that's irrelevant. Felons can get a photo ID. So this will do nothing to keep felons from voting. We all agree they should not vote, but they can get access to driver's licenses, obviously. I think you can also use a revoked license as well if it has the photo. So, Senator Limmer, can you quantify the problems and specify how I'm talking about Minnesota, not other states, but this is a Minnesota statute we're proposing. In Minnesota, if you could please quantify, say in the last decade, how many problems there have been, where they have taken place, that would be helpful to, I think, members of the body.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Cohen, or Madam President and Senator Cohen, just like I had mentioned before to you in the last committee that we were in, this bill, the intent of having this bill is to modernize our voting system. You know, back when the voting system was created, there were no computers, there were no electronics. They relied on paper ballots. And since then, a lot of states have gone far ahead of Minnesota in bringing quality, speed, efficiency to their voting system, but somehow there's opposition to it today. I never said that there was or justified this bill as a result of problems in the state aside from the fact that we need to modernize and the people of Minnesota deserve a system that is safe, secure, and has the integrity expectation that every voter would want in the state of Minnesota. Now, you keep bringing back, tell me the results, tell me the facts, tell me the problems, tell me the convictions. This bill is designed to modernize the system of election process in the state of Minnesota. We now live in a computer age. We have cameras. We have the ability to identify people as the person who's standing before a voting booth. And that person who says who they are should be that person. Now, I don't know why anyone would want to walk away from an opportunity to make sure that our ballot system is 100% successful and has the integrity that this state deserves. But you continue to want to bring in this little loose string of a discussion about recalling all of the problems or the convictions or the accusations in the last 10 years, the last decade. I would think we would want to be looking forward on this bill. I would think we would want to have a system that's modern and efficient and reflects the integrity of our people. But somehow there's opposition today, and I can hardly wait to get into the other discussion points later on today. But Senator Cohen, this bill is intended, just like in my opening comments that maybe you missed, that this is to modernize the system in Minnesota and recognize the technology in a cost-efficient way.
Follow-up, Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam President, Senator Limmer, that sounds great. That's not what I heard from Senator Thompson, however. Senator Thompson indicated that this was needed to bring about an integrity to the system, to show a photo ID, make sure we know who you are, and so on. I mean, kids have been using fake IDs to get in bars for decades, so I'm not very appeased relative to that. So you keep on talking about modernizing the system. What I've heard from others, however, is that this is not to modernize the system. This is to make sure we have a photo ID. So what we've heard on one hand is apparently there are no problems. From Senator Limmer has made it clear. We have no history of any problems in the state of Minnesota that this legislation will solve. Not one. Both in committee, now on the floor, Senator Limmer, the author of the bill, has put hours and hours into this legislation, cannot specify a single incident of a faulty vote, an erroneous vote, a fraudulent vote that this bill would correct. However, we have heard some descriptions of problems that will take place. We've had Senator Langseth talk about what's going to happen to senior citizens. Now, in the Finance Committee, Senator Ingebrigtsen said seniors are the first people to vote. That's correct. As long as they have the ability to vote, as long as they're healthy, as long as they can get to the county election office to have their provisional ballot counted, as long as they don't get ill and go to the hospital, they will be able to vote. Senator Cruyff indicated that he has a son with a disability. He and his wife have made sure that that child has been able to vote. And that's commendable, as long as you have parents of the quality of Senator Cruyff and his wife who have the ability to take care of their children. We've had the discussion with Senator Harrington, who's talked about what the impact will be on people at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, the people who don't have the $45 to get a birth certificate so they can get the photo ID, so they can get registered to vote. So we've had instance after instance where people will be prevented from voting. Now, I'm not one to suggest that 200,000 people will be disenfranchised because of this bill, but I've not heard a single incident that will be protected by this bill. What I have heard is the suggestion that there will be dozens and hundreds of people disenfranchised. And if one person is disenfranchised because of this bill, that is in contravention of this right, a right that has been declared throughout the 200 years of this country's history by constitutional amendment, by federal statute, and by a civil war.
Senator Limmer, to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cohen, you think of you would probably describe this bill as unraveling a wingnut on Western civilization by the comments that you've brought forward. You know, bills like this, the bill before you is modeled after the Indiana law that went through constitutional challenge. Supreme Court of Indiana upheld it. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld it. Your argument of constitutionality doesn't hold water, Senator Cohen. Other states that have done similar bills also have sustained constitutional challenge. Now, we've had a lot of discussion. I suppose we can get into this fear-centered leadership style that we seem to see here on the floor today. You know, you would think that everybody is either old, infirm, or have some malady that prevented them from ever getting a photo identification card of any kind in the state of Minnesota. We heard Senator Harrington say 55% of the black population in the state of Minnesota would be disenfranchised by this bill. The estimates from the Department of Public Safety says that the people that don't have an identification card of any kind numbers only 144,000 out of 5 million population. And for some reason, we're making this small group of focus that we've addressed by giving them a free ID card for the purposes of voting. If they choose to vote, if they choose to want to do that, so far in their life, they've choosed against getting any kind of identification card. But we're going to make it available, and we're going to do it without cost. Now, you would think, now, I don't even know what the population of our African-American community is in the state of Minnesota. I don't even know what the percentage is. But it sure seems like it's a heck of a lot more than 144,000 people. You would think that everybody in the state does not have any form of identification card. They have no record of who they are, what they are, where they were where they reside. You would think that this is a terrible problem in the state of Minnesota, which it simply is not. Now let's bring the focus of the bill on what it really is. The public has told us repeatedly that they're sensing problems in our election system. They're the ones that bring the anecdotal stories of what's going on in the state of Minnesota. And yet at the same time, this bill has come up from time to time in recent years, and it was slammed down by a majority of legislators from before. This is a new day for the people in Minnesota. This is not a process to disenfranchise anyone. In the state of Indiana, when this style of bill went through, there were more voters that turned out to vote in the next election than there was before certification by a photo identification. The facts do not bear out the argument.
To that point, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, I'm glad you keep on, in response to my questions, pointing out to the state of Indiana. In Indiana, if I'm not mistaken, when they adopted the system, only 18% of the provisional ballots were counted. Second, Indiana, whether after the system was adopted or before the system was adopted, is one of the lowest voting states in the country. I think after the system was adopted, still ranks somewhere in the low 40s, 46, 47, 48% in the country in terms of percentage of people voting. So to use Indiana as our prototype, I suggest is not something that strengthens your argument. You've talked about the constitutionality. I know that Indiana's law was declared constitutional. If I'm not mistaken, Missouri's law was declared unconstitutional, and I believe based on the cost of a birth certificate. Now, neither you nor I on the floor of the Senate can determine what the constitutionality of the statute might be. The fact that there's a significant cost involved with some people getting access to the right to vote flies in the face of the amendment to the U.S. Constitution with the abolition of the poll tax. A federal constitutional amendment will override either state law or state constitutional amendment if that argument is to be made. But again, Madam President, Senator Limmer, you suggest that we ought to look at Indiana. Certainly, Indiana's additional turnout took place, I believe, in 2008, which was a presidential year, which had an unusual turnout relative to the candidates running for president, not so much because of the system. But even with that, they still had a very low percentage turnout.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. Oh, I have so much to say. Starting with the fact that I don't think that we should look at Indiana as any sort of bright, shining star of something we should emulate. After all, the Indiana Secretary of State committed voter fraud in the last election. Voter fraud by the Secretary of State. He voted using his ex-wife's address, even though he just got married, presumably to another woman, moved into another house with another woman, but he still voted in the house, in the address of his ex-wife. Let's not be using Indiana as any good example to follow. Next, Senator Limmer, would you yield for questions?
Senator Limmer will yield. Senator Higgins.
Senator Limmer, do you have the fiscal note available? I believe that the members should be able to see the fiscal note of this bill. It lays out in pretty stark terms the costs to our local government. It tells how you presume to pay for this bill. And those things are all relevant to our discussion. If you could have that copied and get distributed to everyone, I think that would help our discussion quite a bit.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Higgins, I do have a fiscal note. We were hoping to have it passed out earlier. If everyone wants to have one, we can get a copy. The fiscal note is coming from three different sources on this provision. One is from Department of Transportation Fund. They're the ones that issue the requests to order up voter identification cards in this request in the bill, but they're also the ones that order up our driver's licenses and other state identification cards. We recognize their ability to do that, although the voter identification card is not to be used for general identification purposes, but for the purposes of voting. That would be one part. The other part is coming from HAVA funds that are technically not designated, although there is a disagreement with the Secretary of State's office on the use of the money. And we in the legislature are advising that they use up to $2.5 million for an education program and other refinements to their system in order to incorporate voter identification into their credential process. And then the remaining is general funds for the balance.
Madam President.
Senator Higgins.
Senator Limmer, would you tell us what the cost to local governments would be from the fiscal note, please?
Well, Senator Higgins, our discussion was limited to state costs, but there really is very little cost to local government. We're not requiring them to get involved in electronic balloting. The electronic balloting is at their option if they want to get involved in that. And so most of our funding was focused on education of voters and Secretary of State, as well as the ID cards and other sundry expenses.
Madam President.
Senator Higgins.
Senator Limmer, earlier you said that this bill would modernize our election, our way of conducting elections. But I believe that the only real modernization would be the use of the electronic poll books. The rest of us is just changing the way we do things. It's not modernization. It's just different. And I was sort of unhappy that you didn't actually go through the bill and actually talk about the provisions of the bill. You gave a broad overstatement, but you didn't tell us about the changes to the recounts that you're proposing, anything about the electronic poll books, which are optional, only if the counties want to pay for them, and the counties have said they're not going to pay for them because there's no money to do that. So I would suggest to members that they actually take a good look at this bill and see what's in there. Senator Limmer, I have a couple more questions. On page 16, there are... starting on the bottom of page 15, there's a list of ways that someone could satisfy the photo ID requirement, the Minnesota driver's license, the Minnesota ID, and all of those things. And one of the ways, it says, is a tribal ID. But just having a tribal ID isn't good enough. It says that it has to have a photo of the voter, the voter's address, and any other items of data required to be on a Minnesota ID card. So, you know, through the magic of the internet, I called up and found an image of a tribal ID from the Red Lake Band. And there's the picture, there's the person's name, and there's the address. That's all. There's nothing else on that tribal ID that matches or would give the same information that my driver's license would give. My date of birth, my gender, eye color, God forbid, my height and weight, the expiration date. I assume your tribal ID really never does expire, so that's okay. But there's a big mismatch between these tribal IDs and what you say also has to be included on them. Now, I don't think we get to decide what's on a tribal ID. So I think that's a problem with your bill. I said...
Senator Higgins.
I said, Senator Limmer, that I don't believe the Minnesota Senate gets to decide what's on a tribal ID. And so I think the provision in here requiring that all the information that's on our driver's licenses or a Minnesota ID card be on a tribal ID is something that we cannot require.
Senator, may I remind members to address the remarks?
Sorry, Madam President, I apologize.
President, Senator Limmer.
Madam President and Senator Higgins, you are correct in describing this. There is a requirement for some of the data that we use to identify people. On a driver's license, it's used to identify who the person is. And we're looking up the Section 171 so we can be a little bit more specific in your answer.
Okay, Madam President, then I have another question,
Senator
please.
Higgins.
Madam President, do you know what your voter identification number is?
I don't believe that I'm obligated to respond to questions.
Well, I was addressing
you.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, do you know what your voter identification number is?
I'd love to tell you what it is right now, but I do not.
See, I don't know mine either, Madam President. I don't think anybody in this room knows. But it says on page 17 that someone who casts a provisional ballot has to put on the provisional ballot envelope their name, their address, their date of birth, and their voter ID number. I'm curious about how anybody would know that number, especially if presumably they aren't in the SVRS, which would probably give them that number. And I'm wondering if Senator Limmer could tell us that.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Higgins, could you point out the reference on the page?
Sure.
I was trying
page
to get information
17.
On your last question.
I'm sorry.
Okay, page Senator Higgins
Madam
and Senator
President.
Limmer. We're talking over one another, and that is not good.
I'm sorry. Madam President, it is
Senator
on page
Higgins.
17, starting on line 19.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, I'm just trying to catch up. Madam President, the Secretary of State keeps that number, voter identification number, and it would be on the roster that this is making reference to.
Madam
Senator
President?
Higgins.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, if somebody's on the roster, they can vote. There would be no reason for them to cast a provisional ballot if they were on the roster. So this is a provision for somebody who's presumably not on the roster and would have to cast a provisional ballot. So there really is, I think, no voter ID number available for those folks in any way that could be found in a polling place. And if it is, Madam President, they could vote.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, Senator Higgins, there's a lot of new people that come and vote all the time, and they don't have a voting number either, but we allow them to vote in as just like current law. There's no change here. If there was a new person, in the case of a provisional ballot, it just means that we do not know whether or not the photo identification is, if they have no photo identification, they may be a new voter, they may not have a number, and we allow them to vote. That's what provisional balloting is all about. We don't want to turn anyone away from the ballot. We want them to vote, but in the event that we can't identify who they are or where they live, provided they, hopefully they're coming out of that precinct, that they would cast a vote, and it would be considered a provisional ballot.
Madam President, still, Senator Limmer, there is no way for pretty much any voter to know what their voter ID number is. So having it on this provisional ballot envelope is a waste of paper, and nobody will be able to fill it out. I'll just say it that way. So I think that's yet another problem in your bill. Going on to page 18, starting on line 11,
Senator Higgins,
Madam President.
Senator Limmer
Madam
wanted
President.
To respond to that.
Okay.
Thank you,
Senator
Madam
Limmer.
President. Senator Higgins, in the event of not having a number, the election judge is going to give you that number anyway. That's what an election judge is. Part of their responsibilities is to do that. So if they don't have a number, if they're casting a provisional ballot where there is a question of whether or not who that person is and where they live, they're going to get the number. They get it from the election judge.
Madam President,
Senator Higgins,
I don't believe you get a voter ID number until you are entered into the SVRS. That's the point at which you get the number. It's in the data entry process. So if a person is coming to vote and doesn't have an ID or doesn't follow whatever all these list of requirements now would be, there is no voter ID number to be given to that person until they are actually certified that they can vote and get entered into the SVRS, the statewide voter registration system.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. It was just pointed out to me, we started getting deep into the weeds on this debate, but if I could bring your attention to page 17, line 20, what we're really requiring is the envelope. The requirements for the envelope must contain a space for the voter to list the name, address, date of birth, and voter ID number, the space for the number.
Madam President,
Senator Higgins.
I know that. I said that. I'm just saying that it's one of those items of information about yourself that nobody knows, and neither would the voter, the election judges. So going on to page 18, Madam Chair, on about page or line 11, it talks about the municipal clerk or the county auditor must count a provisional ballot if. And the first one states that the statewide voter registration system indicates that the voter is eligible to vote. So, Senator Limmer, I'm kind of confused about, well, you're not listening.
All right.
I guess I should just talk for a while. Madam President, this is, I've gone on quite a long time. And I probably could go page by page of things that make no sense. But I'm disappointed that Senator Limmer hasn't gone through the bill and talked about anything other than in broad strokes. Nothing in Article 4 has been talked about in recounts. We don't have any information about poll books. And I think that the average person on the Senate floor needs to know actually what is going on in this bill. We've all focused on the voter ID, but that's just one piece of a really bad bill.
Further discussion, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senator Sieben made the point that this legislation is a solution in search of a problem. I'm going to take it one step further. This legislation is completely unnecessary, members. In fact, let's face it, this is not an attempt to make the voter system better, because this system will only serve to disenfranchise voters. You know, Minnesota already leads the nation in voter participation and election integrity. In 2008 presidential elections, over 78% of the voter population of Minnesota participated. The Minnesota election system has been crafted by a bipartisan legislation and has withstood the test of three statewide recounts. No cases of voter impersonation have been identified in Minnesota, which is the only kind of fraud that this bill will prevent. And when it comes to costs, members, this bill will add over $5 million to the state budget deficit, and it will impose an estimated $8 million in unfunded mandates on local governments. Our local governments are already being hit so hard they can't afford to do what they're supposed to do now, and we're going to put another $8 million on them. But there's some interesting things about this bill also that I have to keep wondering about. And you know, being from rural Minnesota, I see how it works in rural Minnesota. And what happens in rural Minnesota is your election judges have normally been there for 15 or 20 or 30 years. and they know everybody who's walking into the polls. And so when you walk into a polling booth in rural Minnesota, they look at you and they open the book and they say, sign here. They don't ask you who you are, give me a photo ID, because they already know who you are. And I think Senator Hoffman actually pointed to a point with her father-in-law about how safe the system actually is, because his name was on the books for 4 years while he wasn't a voting member of the public anymore, and nobody came in and claimed to be him, and nobody voted in his place. Why? Because the people at the polls knew the guy, and they knew if somebody walked in and tried to identify themselves as Senator Hoffman's father-in-law, they would have said, no, you aren't him. I know him. I know who he was. And so, you know, you actually have a point, Senator Hoffman, of how good the system works. But I have a question, and Senator Langseth referred to it. His mother is actually older than my mother, and I know that if my mother had to go get her picture taken, there's a pretty good chance she would say, I'm not going through that. I'm not going to go get an ID. I've been voting all these years. Why should I have to do that? This is completely wrong. I should not be required to do this. But in her case, she actually would be able to actually walk to a photographer and get her picture taken if need be. But what about the people in the nursing homes? What about the people in wheelchairs? What about disabled people? What about people who can't get to a photographer? What about people who can't get a photo ID? Well, there's something called provisional voting in here. Well, Senator Cohen, there's a really good reason why only 18% of the provisional ballots were counted in Indiana. Just imagine an 85-year-old guy in Hibbing, Minnesota, voting provisionally. And within the next 7 days, he has to drive 80 miles to Duluth to present his identification to the county auditor to prove that he is who he says he is and get his vote certified. Well, members, it's hard enough to get people to actually do that one thing once every 4 years to go to the poll and vote, let alone now make them drive 80 or 85 miles to prove who they were when they didn't have a photo ID. And I have to ask some questions. What happens in the event of a photo ID that's 20 years old and the person doesn't look like the photo anymore? Is that going to be a valid photo ID? I don't know. I know I've seen some of my old pictures, and I'm not sure I look like some of my old pictures anymore, and I'm not even that old yet. And so, members, there's some very inherent problems in this bill. And just to point out three more things. Just knowing a person at the poll is not allowed. This bill provides that all voters must present a photo ID when voting in person, and the election judge must confirm their name, address, and date of birth. So in rural Minnesota, if you just happen to walk into a poll, a polling place where you've been voting for the last 40 years, and the person looks at you and knows who you are, you still have to pull out a photo ID, which you may not have, because 25% of our seniors don't have them. And the person can't just say, oh, hi, Joe, sign your name here. The polling person now has to say, pull out your photo ID so I can verify who you are so that you can vote again after, like you've always voted for the last 40 years. That's not allowed. A valid university-issued student ID is no longer a valid photo ID. You have to go and get a special photo ID in order to be able to vote on the campuses. And think about this. A Social Security number is not allowed on our absentee ballots anymore to identify the person. So it seems to me we're disallowing possibilities for people to vote in this bill as opposed to increasing the possibilities for people to vote in this bill. This bill is about disenfranchisement, members. This is not about making the system more secure. Vote no on this bill.
To that point, Senator Limmer, and then I do have Senators Goodwin, Bonhoff, and Nelson on the list. So, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Tomassoni, I'm kind of perplexed by the person, the hypothetical that you suggested had to drive all the way to Duluth, 85 miles away, when the bill says that I suppose they could choose to do that. Maybe they're going into town to get some other supplies when they're out that far, but the bill would also allow you to simply go to your local municipal clerk, kind of the ones that held the ballot open for that individual citizen anyway, and they could get their verification done at that time if they provided a provisional ballot. You don't that individual, that constituent of yours, doesn't have to take that long trip to Duluth. As far as student identification, I've heard it a couple times before, and it must be that the members aren't reading the bill, but if the voter is a student, he or she may use a driver's license or an ID card issued by any United States state or territory that does not include the voter's current address. But along with a current student fee statement that includes the address in the precinct. So we can use that identification card from anywhere else in a state or territory, a government-sponsored ID card, as long as they bring a student fee statement that shows that they actually have an address in the precinct. So I hope we kind of can put that issue to rest, because we're not doing what people are characterizing this bill as.
Further discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Well, Madam Chair, Madam President, I want to go back to what Senator Thompson said earlier about us having our work done in the committees, and of course we know that's not true, and we have all the conference committee reports yet that we have to hear, and very little time left to hear them. But here we are spending a lot of time on this bill that is going to disenfranchise voters, because if it's not going to disenfranchise voters, what I want to know is why are these 37 groups against it that include the Alexander House for Battered Women, the Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis, the Citizens for Election Integrity, the Jewish Community Action, the League of Rural Voters, the League of Women Voters, the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, Minnesota State University Student Center Association, Minnesota Unitarian Universalist Social Justice Alliance, Native Vote Alliance in Minnesota, Older Women's League of Minnesota, Our Savior's Community Services, St. Stephen's Human Services, Twin Cities Jewish Community, YWCA. Those are just some of the organizations that are against this bill, and that includes an awful lot of people in those 37 organizations. So I do think that these groups would not sign on as being against this unless they really believe there was going to be voters are going to be disenfranchised. So I think that is obviously a problem. And also, the cost of this bill is another problem, of course. We don't know where we're going to get the money to solve our budget problems right now. But in addition to the $5 million or so that this bill allocates, Citizens for Election Integrity did a study, and I think they did a pretty good fiscal note on some of these issues, and they came up with something else that's not included in this bill, and that's $19.5 million that is estimated for voter education and outreach. So we're going to change the system here a year and a half before the next election, and we're not going to have any money included in this bill for voter education, $19.5 million. And Missouri estimated that would cost $17.4 million in Missouri to educate their voters on the change. We don't have that going on here. The other thing is that we talk about integrity in the system. Well, Minnesota actually has a system that has a lot of integrity. North Dakota doesn't even ask for voter registration if we're going to start comparing states. But here's what we have in Minnesota. We have voter registration. We have a registration oath. We have verification of newly registered voters. We have a statewide voter database. We have postal verification cards. We also have Minnesota Department of Corrections data. We have an election day oath. We have transparency on election day. We have post-election review of voters, transparency after election day, and investigations by county attorneys. Those 11 things we currently have already to make sure that we have integrity in the system. So I think we need to get back to the work that we were sent here to do this session, and that is to resolve this $5 billion shortfall. The final thing I want to say is that birth certificates has been mentioned as are $45. For those folks that don't have a driver's license and need to get a birth certificate to get a voter ID or don't have a marriage license, which is less than a birth certificate but still costs, $45 amounts to a poll tax. We're saying if you don't have that $45 to get a marriage license or a birth certificate, you don't have any other form of ID, then you can't vote. So, Madam President and members, this is a bad idea. Let's defeat it. Thanks.
Further discussion, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I think after the last two recounts that we've had in Minnesota, that voters are concerned about voter integrity, and that there is a lot of talk in our communities about the importance of having proper identification. And so I have been at town hall meetings and been in community forums where my voters have expressed that as well. So I actually stand as somebody who's for having some sort of identification, and I think it is part of the future for Minnesota elections and something that I would support. Having said that, I go back to the process about this bill. Senator Sieben talked about the bipartisan elections group that worked at the University of Minnesota with Professor Larry Jacobs. It was the year before last, and I was part of that group as well. We met week after week after week for a long period of time and looked at many issues with regards to elections. We had a matrix of things that were listed as things that needed reform, and we began with things we agreed upon most, and we worked out from there. It was controversial. It was challenging. I found myself sometimes, you know, agreeing with Tom Emmer more than some of my other colleagues, and that was surprising. But actually, I was joking about that, but actually it was a very fulfilling experience in that we saw that we could come to agreement, and it was that process that allowed us to then change our primary date, as well as Senator Sieben and Senator Rust and many others worked on enacting many other election reforms. One of the biggest concerns I have had this session is that we have not engaged in a bipartisan way at the beginning of working on very important and challenging, complex issues. The leads of the chairs of the committees have not engaged the leads and have not said, let us try from the beginning to put together a bill that reflects the bipartisan makeup of the legislature and, for that matter, the state. You know, I have said many times, there was no mandate. We have a Democratic governor and we have a Republican-led legislature. We actually have the opportunity to break new ground here in Minnesota by working together, finding where there is common agreement, and then hammering out where there are differences. So, for example, with this bill, one of the things I'm most concerned about are those who are not able to get this photo ID in a timely fashion. I've understood that in other states, there's a process for an affidavit. The affidavit is something that allows somebody to vote on that day. In this bill, we have instead a provisional ability to vote. And then the burden is on the citizen to find a way to come back within 7 days. It is my belief that a system of an affidavit would be a much more inclusive process for those exceptions, and that, in fact, the fiscal note of tracking down those affidavits and making sure that that person is who they say they are would be much less expensive than devising this whole system whereby we have to pay for all these voter cards. If instead we had an exception system and then used our resources to make certain those who said they were someone without an ID could be verified. I think there are some common sense measures that could be done, and I understand that Senator Howe has a bill, which I haven't seen, that actually proposes an affidavit system. I think there are things that could be done. I want the people in my community to know that I hear their concerns, that I'm committed to addressing those concerns, that I'm actually hopeful that if this bill does get get vetoed, that there will be an opportunity to work in a bipartisan way to solve some of the pitfalls and the challenges. It's not all right with me to sign or to vote green on a voter ID bill that the League of Women Voters is telling me that's a no. If the League of Women Voters has concerns, then I think we should hear their concerns and get them worked out. We have some time before the 2012 elections. Let's not just shut out those who we don't agree with. Let us use the legislative process. You know, I would have to commend Senator Gerlach. Senator Gerlach runs his committee in such a way that when those disagree, he gives them a charge, work it out, or don't come back here. There are many issues with this bill. I think I commend Senator Limmer for responding to what he hears as a growing public concern. Now, some may say that concern is invalid, and that's fine, but perception is reality, and I believe the public is concerned about voter integrity, and I don't blame them because we've had two tough recounts, and that leaves a concern in one's mind. This bill isn't there yet because it hasn't allowed itself to go through the process to work out the concerns of the many groups who have raised them. So I would urge Senator Limmer that if this doesn't work out, to approach this in another way, perhaps work with Senator Howe. I offer my assistance to be a part of this process and come to some agreement with regard to these activities. Now, having said that, I think our first priority is balancing the budget, and this could be done over the interim or next year. So thank you.
I have Senators Nelson, Magnus, and Ortman. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I don't believe there's a single body in this chamber that would want to disenfranchise one single eligible voter. And to that end, we've had a lot of discussion today about different times and different cases where a voter might be disenfranchised. I would like to refer members to Section 18. The public needs to know that those concerns have been addressed. And there was great bipartisan support in addressing those concerns. In local government, Senator Reinert offered an amendment, which you will find in Section 18, lines 11.26, regarding the concerns that Senator Pappas addressed regarding those students at our higher education institutions. I would encourage members to look at that. Certainly, their IDs are acceptable as long as they are on the list of residents within that particular district that is provided by the university. Also, in local government, I offered an amendment regarding residential facilities. And should members not know, they are identified in law. They are the things we've been talking about today: nursing homes, veteran homes, residential facilities, group residential housing, developmentally disabled housing, sheltered for battered women. There are provisions in this bill to make sure that none of them are disenfranchised by not having a photo ID. So I would encourage voters and the public to know that those issues have been addressed. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Magnus.
Well, thank you, Madam President. I just want to respond first to a couple comments made on the floor here. You know, and I know we get excited during the heat of debate and sometimes get confused with some of the facts, But I would point out some facts, because it's been said that we don't work in a bipartisan fashion, and Madam President, members, I think that's certainly not true. I'd point out the work that we did on the agriculture bill, the finance bill, the bill that was passed by the Senate, signed by the governor. We worked on that bill in a bipartisan fashion, members, and I know Senator Bonhoff and some of the others mentioned earlier that we weren't working that way, but we are in the areas that we can, and we're working today on a bill we have up later in the Ag Committee, working with the some of the minority members. So some of us are trying to do what we can. So to paint us all with a broad brush, I don't think is quite fair, because I remember when we started the session, I went over to the state office building, and I met with the minority members of the committee, And some of those were surprised because they said, Doug, what are you doing here? And I said, you're on the committee, and I want to introduce the staff to you, and I want to talk about how we'll do the committee, how we're going to operate it, and the rules, which we don't have any rules. And I said, I want to know the opinions you have, and I want to know the ideas you have for the good of the state, because I don't claim to have all of the good ideas. And, you know, a couple of the members told me that that's strange. Nobody had done that before. Nobody had walked from the Capitol over to the state office building before to meet with the minority members. So let's not paint us all with a broad brush. The second item I wanted to talk about, Madam President, was the we've done a lot of talking about fiscal notes here, and you know, fiscal notes look like they, you know, are supposed to offer us a basis for decisions, and especially in the fiscal background of things. And we've discussed this through a lot of years here at the Capitol, maybe forever. I don't know when we started using fiscal notes, but it seems like whoever gets the advantage from a fiscal note or perceives one, that's what they use. And so, and I think in too many cases that's what happens. In the discussion yesterday in the Finance Committee, for example, I was questioning one of the agencies, in fact, the Secretary of State's office, because I have been watching these fiscal notes as we go through these committees. And it appears to me, I'm not saying it's factual or true, but it appears to me that in some cases, some of these fiscal notes don't make a lot of sense, but they would support another person's position. But in one case, Madam President, I would point out the fiscal note we got from the Secretary of State dealing with the cost of local governments, because several of the members have talked about that. And for an example here, they've got a computer system here, a laptop computer, for $2,500, and they list the specifications required that they believe would be required for this laptop computer to run. And so I asked people from the Secretary of State's office, well, do you have any bids you can show us? And, you know, how did you come up with $2,500? And if you had one, I wish you would, you know, give me some examples of this. And I have not gotten those. And so, Madam President, what I did was do a little investigative work myself. I got on the internet on my laptop computer and started digging around and looked up the specifications they would have. And they said $2,500. I came up with one of them here, and I didn't do a lot of shopping. Just went to one entity. Sells computers, and that was instead of $2,500 for the specifications here, this one was $1,049.99. Again, the specifications that they put out here. Another one's more expensive than that. Instead of $1,150, basically, this one is $1,500, but still significantly less than the fiscal note that anyone could have got on the internet and looked up. And you know, and I said, well, are we gonna make bulk purchases on this? Because, you know, I'm kind of used to, if you do a volume deal, you get a discount on that. So there probably are additional discounts if we did things right. You could do. You know, so when we talk about the horrendous costs in here, and we're kind of loose with numbers, throwing all kinds of numbers around depending on what numbers you want to quote to support your point of view is, but members, you've got an internet. Look it up and see what some of these things cost. It's kind of simple. You don't have to rely on a fiscal note from someone that may not support the position of the bill. Use some sense. That's my suggestion to the members, Madam President.
Senator Bonoff, to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, Senator Magnus, forgive me for making a broad, sweeping statement, because, in fact, I think each person in this chamber has a commitment to work in a bipartisan way at some point. And I voted for your agricultural omnibus bill because I watched that's how you put that thing together, and I've appreciated sitting with you in finance. I've worked with Senator Olson, and I know each person here can cite an example of when they have worked in a bipartisan way. But I think we ought to have as a litmus test test when we bring forward a significant piece of legislation that there is bipartisan votes, and that if there isn't, then there's been something missing, and we ought to go back and say what's missing and go to the knowledgeable experts or those you think might be open to working with you and see if you can't put something forward where you can get that kind of bipartisan support. Not everybody's ever going to agree on anything, but there ought to be a crossover on big pieces of legislation. And if that were to be the case, then I think we would have a different outcome at the end of the legislative session. And I don't think we'd be sitting here today with this amount of time, you know, to May 23rd with real concern around what is the roadmap out of here. And I know that isn't about this elections bill, but I think it's pertinent because I think that it ought to be the way in which we work. So Senator Magnus wasn't singling you out, and in fact, you do a good job of always trying to adhere to that.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President, and I want to make sure that facts still mean something around here. First, I heard that a birth certificate costs $45. Do you check your facts before you say that on the Senate floor to those of you who said it? It's $26. Check the Ramsey County website, $26, not $45. 144,000 people are estimated by the Department of Public Safety to perhaps not have an ID that would qualify for voting here. 144,000 people, not millions. Why are we playing what if here? We're trying to dig so deep to find the example of somebody that might get missed here. What are you trying to prove? That we should not pass this bill? There are so many good reasons to pass this bill. This bill will restore voter integrity. It will restore public confidence in our elections. We don't want to dissuade people from voting. We want to encourage people to vote and to remind them that, yes, it means something. It is their right of self-governance that is at stake here. Please don't devalue my vote or anyone else's vote by valuing it less than a routine financial transaction. My son Sam is here visiting today. He's 13. He goes to Pioneer Ridge Middle School. He has three IDs in his wallet today, the Pioneer Ridge ID with a photo on it. He's got a library card for Chanhassen. He's got a lifetime fitness card in his wallet. He's got a bank account, a Social Security ID number. This is the society we live in today. We all have these identifications. If we don't, we have family members, as testified here by Senator Sieben and Senator Langseth and Senator Tomasoni and Senator Hoffman. We have family members that will help folks get IDs. We're worried about students. They have student IDs. So I think we're playing a game here of what if to justify a vote no, when really common sense tells everybody in Minnesota that this makes a lot of sense. We've had some election issues. We want to make sure that only those that are eligible to vote actually vote, and we want to make sure that they only vote one time. That's common sense. Why is that so hard? I don't think it's that hard. And frankly, to your point, Senator Bonoff, Senator Limmer has been so incredibly accommodating on this bill. How many hearings have there been on this bill? How many meetings have there been on this bill? I would be surprised if there's even one member of this chamber, except maybe Senator Pogemiller, who hasn't sat on a committee that has heard this bill at one point or another. And I'm sure there have been many amendments. Six committees. And so, Senator Bonoff, there are not going to be any engraved invitations to you to prepare an amendment if you don't like a bill. I sat in the minority for 8 years. I never got one of those engraved invitations. I knew that if I wanted to influence the outcome of a bill, that I needed to step in, do my research, offer an amendment, build support for my ideas, and work with the author. That's how it works. So, members, I hope you'll vote for election integrity, for public confidence in our elections, for valuing our votes, and making sure that we have as fair an election as possible, because it is our right of self-governance and our freedom and our democracy at stake.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam President.
we were getting to the point where some people may have some concerns, legitimate or not, and we're going to change our laws to fix that. It's gotten to the silliness point that the President of the United States, after 2 years in office, has to produce a birth certificate to prove he's legitimately in office. Why does he do that? Because there's so many people out there spreading so much misinformation, trying to scare people and so on. So the President of the United States, 2 years in office, has to go down and hunt out a full birth certificate, has to get a waiver from the government in Hawaii in order to produce it. That's nuts. And because some people think he wasn't born in this country, he does it. But now we're going to do something here, and the fear is we might have some felons voting. Well, this bill will not stop 0.00001% of votes being illegally cast by felons. It will stop exactly zero felons from voting with the photo ID because it doesn't indicate felony status on your driver's license. It will stop exactly .0000001% of non-citizens from voting. Stop exactly zero, none. Not 144,000, zero from voting because it doesn't have your citizenship status on your driver's license. Senator Limmer said, and Senator Ortman, I'm not disagreeing. I think we should use the numbers. Only 144,000 Minnesotans, estimate is adult Minnesotans, don't have driver's license or photo ID. Only 144,000. Our razor-thin gubernatorial race was decided by 9,000 votes. Majority of the House in the right areas, 700 votes made a difference. 144,000 is insignificant. It's exactly 144,000 more potentially disenfranchised legitimate voters than felons or non-citizens that the photo ID would stop. And that assumes, that 144,000 assumes that everybody who has a photo ID has one that works. I mean, there are a lot of people who have those driver's licenses who have moved three times since they had it. Yeah, there are people who move every few months. They're not very stably housed and so on, and their driver's licenses aren't current. And if there are, say, there are 3 million Minnesotans who have these photo IDs, adults who could vote with them, assumes they have them. You know, if 1 in 100 people can't find their license, I don't know about people in this chamber, but I know lots of people who lose things, or they have them stolen. If 1 in 100 has it stolen or lost, they can't find it, that's 30,000 people who don't have a photo ID, who might think they have it, and then they find out their wallet was stolen or something the week before. Oh, they don't have a time to go out and get it. If it's 1 in 1,000 who might have misplaced their license or had it stolen, that's still 3,000 people. About 3,000 more than the number of felons and other people who shouldn't be voting who we think we're going to stop. Zero versus 3,000. Senator Langseth was telling us earlier about three people in a township in his district, small township where they all know the people, but they don't have photo IDs. That may be an anecdotal story, but I'll guarantee you that out of those three people, if one of them can't vote because of this, one of those senior citizens who've lived there their whole life, who we want to have voting, if one of them is denied the right to vote because of that, that's one more legitimate voter who's been denied than the number of ineligible felons or non-citizens who this would catch, because we're going to catch zero of them. This is as bizarre as the idea of trying to force the President of the United States issue a birth certificate after he's been in office 2 years. This is bizarre.
I have Senator Higgins, and then after that, I'd like to go to third reading. Senator Higgins.
Madam President, the only voter charges against people in the last couple of elections have been for felons who voted when they should not have. 7, I think, out of the 5 million people who live here. I have a bill, Senate File 824, that would actually solve the problem, or go a long way in solving the problem of felons voting when they shouldn't, a whole lot more than this bill we're talking about today. It's a simple bill, wouldn't have cost anything. All it says is when you're on probation, when you reach the end of your probation period, your probation officer has to tell you your rights have been restored, give you a voter registration card, and tell you that you now can go vote. Have I had a hearing on this bill? Nope. It's a simple solution. It's the one we should have done. This voter ID bill is a bad bill. It's disenfranchisement. It's also a bill that we haven't heard three quarters of. We don't know what's in Article 4, Article 3, Article 2. Senator Limmer is totally changing the recount procedures. Does anybody know what's in it? Yeah, didn't think so. We have no business passing this bill. But if you want to keep folks from voting, if you want to make sure that poor folks, women living in battered women's shelters who are hiding out from their batterers, don't vote, if you want to make sure that Senator Tomasoni's mom, Senator Langseth's mom, don't go vote, here's a bill for you. But if you want a good, honest system of elections in Minnesota, you should be darn proud of the system we have now. There's no voter in our state who wants to do the wrong thing. All that we've ever found when people have looked into it is people made a mistake. They didn't know they couldn't vote. Vote no. This is a disenfranchisement bill. If we pass a bill that keeps from one person from voting, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves.
Secretary will give Senate File 509 its third reading.
Senate File Number 509, a bill for an act relating to to elections, third reading.
Final comments, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, we've had a very good and lively discussion. I'm glad we have. I put out a handout on everyone's desk not too long ago. It's a little cartoon. This cartoonist kind of got it. Shows that you need to use a photo ID to make a bank transaction, rent a movie. If you're going to get a drink at a bar, you got to present an ID card. If you're going to travel on an airplane, you need a picture ID nowadays. But heaven forbid if we ask someone to present an ID card showing who you are and where you live in order to vote and maintain an integrity to our election system that has escaped us till now. Heaven forbid. I suppose you just can't vote for this. You know, we talked about a lot of things. I'm glad Senator Marty brought up the felon idea, because quite honestly, this bill requires the Secretary of State to maintain an electronic database of individuals not registered who are believed to be ineligible to vote, and that includes felons. That includes felons. So it tells the election judge if there's a felon in the area wanting to vote, they can catch it. Now, those of you who are picking this bill apart might want to talk about the recount idea. The recount idea is simply a substantive exact duplication of what's in rules made by the current Secretary of State. Nothing more, nothing less. Might have been a few technical things to make it fit into the language, but the recount codification that we have before us is what's created by the Secretary of State in his rules. Now, I'm just amazed to think that all of those people who've picked this bill apart didn't catch that. Seems like they're kind of cherry-picking the arguments. And we heard that if any one person is denied the opportunity to vote, this is a bad idea. But I may want to also bring forward the current system. And if any illegitimate voter votes, it disenfranchises a legitimate legal voter. Somehow, the other side doesn't want to talk about that. And this is a cure for this type of a problem. Now, there also was some discussion about, has there been any problems with our election day turnouts and whether or not people are voting when they shouldn't. 23,000 election day registration returns were questioned in 2008. 23,000. There's a big problem in Minnesota, and there's a big problem that can be solved today. I'm asking you to support a simple bill that requires a photo identification, listening to the people of Minnesota, and determine that this is a new direction. It's available to us. We have the technology to provide it at a reasonable cost, about $5 to $6 million. And for the 5 million people in Minnesota, I think that's a tremendously good investment. And I would appreciate the support, not only for this bill, for the people in Minnesota.
Further discussion, Senator Bach. Oh, or do you want to, Senator Cohen?
Madam President, thank you. We've talked both in many of the committees and on the floor at some length about the bill. We still have not had answers to the questions as to what happens relative to some of the seniors who are ill. I don't think we've discussed younger military members who might be serving overseas who don't have a photo ID and can't get access to one. But as we vote on this bill, I just want members to think about what the continuum of American history has been in the extension of the franchise. I also want to ask members on the floor, how many people here, we often talk about American history, how many people here know who Fannie Lou Hamer was? I see one person, a couple of people, Senator Robley and Senator Higgins, know who Fannie Lou Hamer was. Senator Pogemiller knows who Fannie Lou Hamer was. Fannie Lou Hamer is one of the heroes of 20th century American history. She was the daughter of a black sharecropper in the state of Mississippi. She was a sharecropper. She was one of the heroes of the Southern Civil Rights Movement in the 60s and in Mississippi, which centered on the right to vote. She was beaten by sheriffs in Mississippi. She was jailed in Mississippi. She had her home vandalized in Mississippi, all because she sought to have the right to vote. Her testimony in 1964, available on videotape, before the Democratic Convention's Credentials Committee, is incredibly eloquent as to what she went through to try to obtain the right to vote. And here is why I think the history of Fannie Lou Hamer is relevant to what we're doing today. Fannie Lou Hamer didn't have a driver's license with a photo ID. She couldn't get one in the state of Mississippi. Fannie Lou Hamer didn't have access to a birth certificate in the state of Mississippi because African-American citizens in the state of Mississippi at that point, those who were born to sharecroppers, those who were the ancestors of those in slavery, didn't have records kept like that in the state of Mississippi. The Southern Civil Rights Movement was about two things. It was about the access to public accommodations. It was about the ability to vote. And the 1964 Freedom Summer, when people were killed, in particular Cheney and Schwerner and Goodman, it was about the right to vote. If Fannie Lou Hamer's Mississippi were to be transported to Minnesota today, that's somebody who could not, under Senator Lerner's bill, get the right to vote. I don't suggest that hundreds of thousands of people be disenfranchised because of this vote. Senator Lerner suggested that if one person votes erroneously or fraudulently, that negates the vote of somebody else. And I would not disagree. But I will tell you, if 20,000 people cannot vote, or 100 people cannot vote, or 1,000 people cannot vote because they are seniors, because they are disabled, because they are military. They don't have the ability to get access to the photo ID, to the provisional ballot, access to approval of the provisional ballot. Then this is a lesser voting system in the state of Minnesota. It will not be Mississippi of 1964. I'm not suggesting that. But one person who can't vote, as Fannie Lou Hamer could not vote, equates to a diminishment of our voting system.
Further discussion, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, back in December, before this legislative session started, the Republican majority made a promise to Minnesotans. They promised that, they promised that they would put a, quote, laser focus on fixing the budget deficit. In February, the Republican leaders, and I quote, said, we're going to focus very specifically and almost without any other distractions solely on the budget, unquote. In March, Republican leaders reminded us that they were, quote, focused on the budget. Matter of fact, Senator Michelle was quoted on March 9th in the Star Tribune saying, the balancing the budget is, quote, the most important thing we do this session. It's job one, job two, and it's job three. Just 2 days ago, a member of the Senate Republican caucus said, we need to be focused on the budget and not, quote, not on sending bills to Governor Dayton he's likely to veto. Yet here we are today, few short weeks left in this session. We still don't have a balanced budget that's come out of the Senate. To our defense, neither does the House. The governor earlier this week said he wants the House and the Senate and the conference committees to resolve their differences, get a legislative plan together by May 6th so that he can commence negotiating with the legislature. But here we are today debating a very, very controversial and very partisan bill. I would argue, and we all got our opinions, that it's terrible policy, adds millions of dollars to the state budget deficit. Senator Limmer, in his opening remarks, said, and I quote, because I wrote it down when he said it, because I was surprised when he said it, that this will bring integrity back to our election system. Senator Ortman, in her very eloquent comments, her word was restore integrity. Members, that all implies there's something wrong with our system, that nobody can prove there's something wrong. We just went through, in 2008 and 2010, two very intensive voter recounts in this state. The whole country was watching, both of them. And there were none cases of voter impersonation that were found in those two intense recounts. None of the kind of fraud that this bill is intending to address. Because this bill's not about integrity. This bill is about putting roadblocks up to the ballot box. This is about making it harder for seniors that don't have a driver's license to have the opportunity to vote. About making it harder for students that are away from home at college and young people, making it harder for them to vote. Harder for low-income Minnesotans. Much harder for people with disabilities. And I'm a little surprised that we are here today after members of this body have taken votes, cut money to our schools, cut money to our colleges and universities, take away health insurance to maybe up to a couple hundred thousand Minnesotans. And now we're going to vote to spend millions of dollars. After we've taken all those votes to make all those cuts, we're going to spend millions of dollars today to try and see if we can find a way to keep law-abiding citizens away from the ballot box. Many people have said it. This is a solution in search of a problem. Minnesota has an election system
that we should all be very, very proud of. It's worked very well. But the real work of this session, members, is about the budget. These kind of issues and all this time, we have an entire legislative session next year that can be devoted to policy and debate here on the floor and constitutional amendments. This is just another distraction from the real hard work that needs to be done this session. May 23rd is coming. It's a few short weeks away. There is a mountain of work to be done on the budget. And if we don't start focusing on it every day, members, this work is not going to be done at the constitutional required deadline of May 23rd. So I urge members, after this vote, it's too late for this bill, it's had third reading. Let's refocus our efforts after this vote to get this budget put together and get the real hard work of this session done.
Final comments on Senate File 509, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President. And I thank Senator Bach for his points, at least some of them, and I'm always flattered when my friend from the Iron Range quotes me. And so I was doing a quick check myself, Senator Bach. I was thinking about January and February and March, and I'm still looking for your budget. I'm still looking for your budget proposal. I'm still looking for the Senate DFL framework for a budget, which I agree is the most important thing we're doing this session. And you're sitting on the sidelines, Senator Bach. You're sitting on the sidelines on what you say is the most important thing to do. And we are not sitting on the sidelines. We've produced a budget, a piece of which has already been signed. Thank you, Senator Magnus. Thank you to all the members. That was a bipartisan piece of the budget. So we've got a few more conference committees rolling. That's another chance for you to engage. We've passed these in record time, and so we've got the ability to bring some other important measures to the floor of the Minnesota Senate. I dare say we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think this is an important bill. I think when people look back on the 2011 legislative session, this will be in the top three. Absolutely. So I thank Senator Limmer for going through a legislative marathon, an obstacle course of six different committees, loads of time for participation, for amendment, for discussion, for testimony, at the same time that he's carrying a large omnibus budget bill. Well, not too large. So, Senator Bach, maybe I'm wrong and I missed something back in January or February or March in some of those articles that you quoted, but absolutely, we're going to stay on this budget and we're working to get done on time. And we're looking forward to your help with that.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 509. All those senators having voted who desired to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 26 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The sergeant will clear the gallery. No demonstrations in the gallery. The sergeant will clear the gallery. Remaining under motions and resolutions, members, there is an addendum that has been printed, and we will revert to the third order of business, messages from the House on the addendum. Secretary will read the first message from
Madam
the House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file. Senate file number 626, a bill for an act relating to human services. There has been appointed as a committee, as such committee on the part of the House, Schumacher, Abler, and Fritz. Senate file number 626 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewicz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files, herewith transmitted House files number 186, 695, 361, 795, and 895. Alban A. Mathewicz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on those messages. Move to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. There are several printed on page 2 of the addendum of today's addendum, and they will be referred as indicated first reading. Moving on to the fifth order of business, reports of committee, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the addendum be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on the bottom of page 7 of today's addendum. Second reading. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we have several authors. Secretary will read the first motion.
Senator Rosen moves that her name be stricken as co-author of Senate file number 1118.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I would move that Senate file 1046 be withdrawn from the Committee of on Jobs and Economic Growth and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans.
Any explanation on that, Senator Senjum?
Madam President, this is a Racino bill. Actually, the state government is the Committee of Jurisdiction for gaming, and it seems like the appropriate place for it to be.
Thank you. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Jungbauer.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 64 be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Elections.
Senator Jungbauer, any explanation on that?
Madam Chair and members, we are doing a delete all amendment, which gives it total jurisdiction in local government.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Metzen, Scheid, and Sharon all day. Senator Ress from 10:30 to 11:10 a.m. Senator Sparks all day. Senator Brown and Cohen from 10:45 to 10:55 a.m. Without objection, they will be excused. Further announcements of Senate interest, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, judiciary members, we're going to begin at 1:15 rather than 1 o'clock. We have a long day, and I thought maybe some of you might want to grab a quick bite to eat before we get started.
Further announcements. Senator Gimsey.
Madam President, the Senate Transportation Committee will convene at 1:15 also in room 123.
Further announcements, Senator Koch.
Madam President, members, I would move now that we adjourn until Monday, May 2nd.
Senator Koch, I'm sorry, before that I didn't see Senator Bach. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Koch yield for a question?
Senator Koch will yield. Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Koch, I didn't hear one announcement about a conference committee meeting. I heard that there were some regular committees meeting, but I'm a little concerned about the progress that the conference committees are making. The governor has asked that the House and Senate resolve their differences by May 6th so that he can get engaged. And I don't know if they're going to meet, but if they are, I think it ought to be publicly announced so that the public and members who aren't on the conference committees know about it. And I'm just curious, are they going to meet today or tomorrow, or are any of them going to meet over the weekend, or what's the timeline relative to conference committees? And maybe the respective conference committee chairs might know better than you, Madam Chair.
No, that's
Senator Koch.
Senator Bach, thanks for the question. Yes, so the conference committees will continue to work. They've all met at least once. As you know, we're ahead of schedule. In fact, as mentioned, Senator Magnus has already got a signature on his budget bill. So what we're facing is a little combination of we've got the policy committee deadlines as well as the conference committees. But all the conference committees know that they need to continue working, and they will. You referenced a May 6th date. But that date is a date set by the governor randomly, not with discussion. We have a deadline of May 23rd, and we intend to have our work done.
Well, further discussion, Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Koch, I think it would be helpful if when conference committees are scheduled and we have a floor session that the time of them is announced on the floor of the Senate so that the public and committee, other members of the legislature are aware of when they're going to take place.
That's a great suggestion, and as best we can, that's well taken. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Then I would move that we adjourn until Monday, May 2nd at 11 a.m.
Senator Koch moves we adjourn until Monday, May 2nd at 11 a.m. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.